B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Thursday, February 7th, 2019, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on WWKB 1520 in Buffalo and ESPN Radio 97.7, 100.1, and 1200 AM in Syracuse, New York. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, there's almost too much going on to keep track of in the new world of esports right now. That's why we're going to do a new segment called Reset the Bracket. That discussion is ahead in about 15 minutes here on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we start today with a growing issue in the video game industry. Once again, reports are surfacing that stocks for major developers like EA, Blizzard, and Take-Two are tanking, and it's got a lot of people worried.
Yeah, so we got to start with the stocks for EA and Take-Two, which fell 13.1% and 13.8% respectively, and Activision Blizzard following that up with a 10.1% decline in stock value. Those are humongous declines in a single week for a stock to tank.
This is really surprising considering that 2018 was almost a landmark year for profits out of the video game industry. How do we square this circle? How do we actually be able to interpret this data? Because it seems like, hey, video games are really growth right now, especially with esports taking off the way that it is.
Well, and specifically, these three companies all have a property that's doing amazing. Red Dead Redemption absolutely smashed records.
Yep.
Grand Theft Auto 5 is one of the most profitable forms of entertainment ever. And again, yeah, esports, OWL is going nowhere but up.
Yeah. So,
how do we try to explain this?
Well, the declines come on the back of weaker than expected profits reports and forecasts for the upcoming year.
They didn't do as good as we wanted them to, but they all still had profits.
Well, it's not to say that they weren't profitable, but when your forecasts are way lower than people think they're going to be, and what you actually brought in is lower than what people think they're going to be, yeah, your stocks go down in that case. And what we're starting to see, there was about a year ago, a financial analyst began to predict that Fortnite's crazy popularity was going to start cutting into the video game market. It's going to start eroding other parts of the video game market away. And the market really didn't bear that prediction out until the end of last year and certainly into the beginning of this year. And what we're starting to see is kind of the decline of that classic AAA development. It's the companies that are putting a lot of effort into, you know, think of Red Dead Redemption 2. That is a long development cycle for
a game that was
one of the most successful of all time.
The most.
Yeah, but it doesn't make enough money, and it only makes money kind of on that one time.
Right. Well, and here's the thing is that, you know, games like Fortnite have been able to figure out two issues that video games previously, and I use that kind of loosely, but video games kind of categorically previously had struggled to deal with. Video games categorically, unless you're talking about an MMO or a MOBA or something that has some kind of continuous multiplayer or online experience, were all finite. They all had a point at which they would end, and then they would cease to have value to someone who has already played them, right? So that's where you started to get the secondhand games market. That's where you started to see GameStop being able to judge the value of a game based on how long people were spending with it. And the other issue that video games had kind of traditionally struggled to figure out was how to get people to pay real money for digital items. How to get them to see the value in something that inherently has no value. And those two things, it's taken quite a few years, because this prediction has been out there for far longer than just Fortnite. This prediction has existed for as long as microtransactions have been officially a part of video games. And so I think that, yes, it has taken a while for the market to bear out, but we did finally see that bear out between 2017 and 2018.
Right, and that erosion, I mean, make no mistake, we're sounding the alarm right now because we're starting to see it, like, in real time.
Yes.
In the last week is, you know, proof of that. We've been talking for years kind of about how the AAA design model is, I don't know if I want to say a bubble, but it's not sustainable. It's the spiraling costs of developing games and the time invested into making AAA games. When you have other options, as Fortnite and PUBG and games of that ilk have proven, there are other ways to go about it. Why would you continue to do it the way that it's been done? You have to put in way more risk. You have to put in way more investment versus, like, what did Fortnite cost to develop? What was the actual risk investment versus something like Red Dead?
Right. And that's also very notable because, as you have pointed out, as games become more detailed, it takes a human touch and therefore expending resources to be able to put those finalized touches on a world or an experience. And if you don't have that, a lot of times your game gets lambasted for being too samey, copy-pasty. Yeah. And that is a common criticism. But yeah, you're right. Look at what Fortnite did. Fortnite has one single island that you drop onto ever, and all it does is change what's in that island and how the game kind of functions in small ways. The development cost for that game must be almost nothing.
Yeah.
And look at how much money they're able to make with their business model. So really, those tables have flipped.
Right. Well, we've been saying for a long time now that the way that video games are developed right now isn't sustainable. But we've also kind of had to hold our tongue because, just like what the financial analysts were seeing, is the market wasn't bearing it out just yet. But all it took was a couple of flops, and then suddenly those things come into the spotlight. Like, take a look at 2018, banner year for great releases. God of War drops, Spider-Man drops, and the success of those games, I think, kind of was camouflaging what is actually happening, because on the other end of it, Destiny 2 isn't performing as expected. We're on the cusp of Anthem releasing, which is, we'll see how that goes. Battlefield, huge flop.
But again, I think that Anthem specifically, And other games of those, you know, The Division, those types of things, I think that those are games that would have been better suited for a finite experience than trying to tack on this ongoing or online persistent experience.
Would that have helped, though? Even if they were finite experiences and did great, they did the same type of profits that Red Dead was shelling out. Is it still going to be enough to combat the type of because look, people are still playing Fortnite. And it's not even us or the analysts that are even seeing this. Remember, Netflix CEO even came out and said, Fortnite is even a competitor to us.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. I want to thank everyone listening on the Talk of Las Vegas, 101.5 FM and 720 AM, as well as KJR 950 in Seattle, Washington. We're currently talking about why AAA stocks are starting to tank. Well, they've been tanking.
Yeah, they've been tanking for the better part of the year.
Not just starting to tank, they've been tanking for the better part of the year. Why that's happening on the backs of such a landmark year like 2018. And I do think that you're right that the flow of money is starting to shift. There's still a whole lot of money out there in the pool associated with video games, but the way that those dollars are being spent is starting to change. And I want to hang on the point of Red Dead Redemption here for just a second, because this is a game that is finite, but also has an online component as well, and sold very, 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 very well in 2018. However, its online mode is not taking off. People are just not playing it,
right?
Whereas, you know,
and that's where the money is, as we found out with GTA Online.
Exactly. And so when you look at something like the Red Dead online component, and then you look at how much money PUBG has been able to make, you know, there is a huge discrepancy between those two things. And I think, you know, if you're looking for a moneymaker, that there is a better way to go about it than Red Dead shows.
Well, let's do some basic math here, right? Let's say you have a remarkably successful AAA title, 10 million copies sold. That's really good. So at $60 a piece, that's $600 million. Okay. About 20% of that is roughly going to be profit, maybe 30%. So that's about $150 million profit.
Jeez.
But if you have to put 5 years developing development into that game, you're only getting back, what, $30 million a year on your investment versus PUBG, which brought in $1 billion profit last year alone.
Well, and don't forget some of the stories. I remember a few years ago we talked about, I think it was one of the Dead Space games put as much into their advertising than
their marketing,
did into their actual development budget.
And so that's the problem. If you've got, I can bring in $50 million on a traditional AAA game, or I have a chance to go for $1 billion a year.
But I don't know that this is necessarily an indictment on AAA studios. I think that this may be an indictment on the types of games that an entire generation is looking to play. Because look at the most recent example added to the Battle Royale genre.
Apex.
Apex Legends, right? So you've got this game that no one has even heard about. Like,
before it releases.
There was rumblings that a third Titanfall was in development. Yep. And that was it. That was basically all we knew about it.
Yeah.
And then in the span of a weekend, everyone is playing this game. Everyone is talking about it. And not just that, it works. Like, within a day of it coming out, the servers aren't unstable.
Nope,
there's no server desync issues. Yep. Everything works and functions. So this is a AAA studio with EA backing them that is, you know, mimicking the genre, the beats of the genre that are out there right now, and is doing quite well. Now, granted, this is only within the first week of it releasing, and we have to see long term how it's going to do. But I think that may be an indication of what kind of flip we've seen within the video game industry. But listen, we want to hear from you. Are you worried about the future of the gaming industry? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily, there's so much going on in the world of esports right now that we're going to break down some of the major issues in a brand new segment that we're calling Reset the Bracket. Stick around. That's coming up next here on Checkpoint XP Daily from Beasley Esports XP.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. CheckpointXP.com.
And welcome back to Checkpoint XP Daily, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on 98.5, the Sports Hub of Boston, as well as the Team 980 in Washington, D.C. Make sure you're following us on our officially partnered Twitch channel over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. We've got a ton of new emotes, including each of our beautiful faces, as well as not one, but two cat emotes. Tali and Fritz, our actual cats, are now Twitch emotes, and there's only one place to get them. That's over at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. There's so much going on in the world of esports right now that it can be tough to make sense of it all. Well, don't worry. We've got a new segment called Reset the Bracket, and we're going to help you get all caught up on what you need to know.
Yep. So I'm going to pose to us five questions that the listeners want answers. So the first one on Reset the Bracket. IEM Katowice is starting
Pokemon.
Next weekend.
Wait, what?
It's a Pokemon, right?
No. It is not.
No. Oh, okay.
That's not the game. We're not doing memory recall.
My bad.
Okay. We're not doing word association here, Robbie. Come on.
You actually have to answer the questions. So IEM Katowice is starting next weekend. You guys seem to talk about it a lot. Why is it so important? So I think the biggest thing is it's one of the largest international tournaments of the year.
Yeah.
It's not just one esport. It's CSGO. It's Dota 2.
Well, listen, Poland is beautiful.
Poland is beautiful. StarCraft 2. But so no matter what game you're a fan of as far as esports go, there's something at IEM Katowice.
Yeah. Well, what's great about these one-time tournaments too, like the IEMs and whatnot, is that, you know, you look right now, you have League going on, you have the Dota stuff, you have Overwatch. These are pros playing all year round. But if you're not actually at the pro level yet, and you want to start to sort of get, you know, into stuff like this, it's these types of things that you can potentially start to work towards.
Well, and of course, IEM Katowice, you know, is a great way to be able to build a context around esports. Right. That's a that's a tournament that it doesn't exist in a vacuum.
No,
but
it's multiple weeks long.
You will be able to see a storyline evolve if you watch it over those weeks that it is. And I think that would give you a really good context for the players involved, people, how they play, and really kind of give you a really good baseline for who is operating inside of the esports scene.
And we'd be remiss to not mention that Katowice is really fun to say. So
that's true. That's true.
I mean, it's important, right?
I mean, we only called it Katowice 5 times before we got it right.
Katowice. So.
Yeah, right.
All right, guys. The National PUBG League seems to be off to a strong start. What sets it apart from Fortnite tournaments or the PUBG World Championships, which seem to flop?
Well, I think the big thing that sets it apart is the presentation. Mm-hmm. That OGN arena is, oh my God, it's spectacular.
Well, even the sort of way that they've gone about deciding how to now sort of present this, you know, focusing on four teams the entire way through.
Yeah.
It now, to me, when I'm watching it, it seems a little bit more like...
It's focused.
Focused, and I actually get more of like a traditional sports vibe from it. Like, I can sit down, and you don't have to be completely tuned into it every single second like you do with something like Overwatch. And you get to see a single or in this case, you know, four different teams sort of storyline unfold throughout the whole thing instead of being like, hey, remember at the beginning they were showing a lot of Cloud9. What happened to them?
Where did they suddenly go? And I think that what it does is that it helps focus the casters on being able to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
When you have 16 teams that you're trying to keep track of, no wonder there's a storyline that gets dropped. There's multiple things happening at multiple places on the map. Mm-hmm. PUBG is a very dynamic game.
Early on.
And so focusing on only four squads allows the casters to be able to, not in a singular way, but in a much more organized way, focus down on four teams and tell those four teams' story on that map.
Very early on, when Battle Royale was just coming into the esports scene, you had thought that there was just too much going on for it to be broadcasted.
You're absolutely right.
That was the problem, but that did stop it from reaching a broader audience.
For me, the biggest thing is the timing. They finally have gotten that figured out. A match takes about 30 minutes to be played, and then there's about 30 minutes until the next match. Before, it was like 40 minutes to play and then an hour of downtime, and it felt really disjointed and not good. Now it's about perfect. Where it needs to be.
But I will say, you know, all of the tournaments that preceded the NPL seemed like they were very necessary in terms of working out all of the bugs to figuring out how to make this a world-class presentation. And now after seeing it debut, I've got to say they've done a very good job at making it exactly that. And it goes pound for pound with OWL and NALCS any day of the week.
Everyone's all of a sudden talking about Super Smash Bros. Competitive again. Why do I keep hearing about it all of a sudden?
Well, that's because Super Smash Bros. Ultimate just released.
That's part of it.
I mean, it ended up being a highly competitive game, much more so than Brawl or Smash 4.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say what you will, I understand that Ultimate has some detractors out there.
Totally.
And some people who still like Melee more. But I think it's undeniable that a follow-up in the Super Smash Brothers canon has been as readily and enthusiastically accepted as Ultimate has. And so there are a lot of players and tournament organizers looking to capitalize on that enthusiasm, and they should, because this is a great opportunity for Nintendo to figure out where their space in the market is as well.
That's what I think the big draw here is that Nintendo is finally starting to get in on esports. And for me, and I think this is a big boon to Sakurai that he was able to do this, that with nearly or almost 70 characters, that they're actually all pretty close to being pretty well balanced.
Yeah, it's pretty strong. And I mean, Genesis 6 just happened. That's why you're hearing so much about it right now. Genesis 6 really went onto the big stage and showed that Smash can be a very entertaining watch.
It was the first outing for Ultimate ever.
And it went very, very well.
It did. It did go very, very well. If you're able to have numbers even similar to what Smash Melee pulls in, then you're starting off on a good foot. That tells me that there is room to grow here. And I think that's what TOs and players should be looking towards, is the idea to capitalize on this enthusiasm. Because listen, I understand that there have been major gripes with all of the other iterations of Smash that have come after Melee. I don't hear a lot of those same gripes about Ultimate.
All right, up next, I'm suddenly hearing about the LEC and LCS regions for League. Isn't that game dead yet?
Nope.
And that's really it. The answer is no. Viewership is actually way, way up, even from Twitch. The LCS...
The player base may be down.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
But your viewership, I mean, LCS is up about 4,000 average concurrent viewers over last year. LEC region is up almost 28,000 concurrent viewers on average from last year.
Wow.
That is an incredible boost in attendance. So, no, I don't think League of Legends is going anywhere. And lastly, Overwatch League Season 2 is set to begin on Valentine's Day. Why should I care? Robbie, you want to start us off with that one?
Yeah, well, I think Overwatch League has some of the same strengths that League of Legends does, but the fact that it's doing just as well as League of Legends, a game that has, what, a 10-year history
behind it? Almost 10 years.
I mean, that right there, just on its face, is sort of points to the strength behind the Overwatch League. And for me, the biggest draw and sort of the biggest strength for it is it's the only esport that is embracing the hometown franchise model, which is going to give it very strong staying power.
I got to echo that sentiment. The way that OWL has embraced the regionalism, which is lacking in all other esports, I think is the thing that really sets it apart from other leagues.
Yeah, for me, I think the best thing that Overwatch League has done, and credit to Blizzard for this, is they're more so than other esports, they looked at the traditional sports model and said, wait, there are things here that we can take from this that are genuinely good ideas. A lot of other esports tried to innovate for the sake of innovation, ignoring the fact that there are things that are proven to work in traditional sports. And Overwatch League said, you know what? No, we're going to borrow what works and innovate where we need to. And I think that's why Overwatch League Season 2, you definitely need to be tuned in for.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. But we got to leave it right there. Listen, we want to hear from you. How did we do? Did you like Reset the Bracket? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint_XP on Instagram. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website at checkpointxp.com for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a full archive of episodes, podcasts, and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Thanks to our executive producing team of Buzz Knight, Mike Thomas, and Rick Scott. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Producing and booking help from Christine Solis, and of course my co-hosts who pull double duties as producers for Checkpoint, Robbie Landis, even though he's not here, nor is Howard. And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.